Hey, welcome to Teen Matters once again here on Life Matters. Michael McKenzie here and my two guests to tease out scenarios involving young people in your life. If you're a parent or someone at a school or in a workplace and you have an issue surrounding a young person and you'd like to resolve it in the best possible way, perhaps we can help. John Hendry is a longtime educator and consultant in the area of positive education. Andrew Fuller is a clinical psychologist who works with young people and families up and down the country. Andrew, John, welcome back.
Hi.
Now, let's talk about your scenario, Andrew, involving young people.
So in the Teen Matters series, no doubt we will talk about anxiety of young people, but today let's talk a bit about where that comes from.
Right.
I work in my clinical practice with quite a number of young, depressed people. And one of the great paradoxes of depression is that you focus very much on yourself, but at the same time, you don't care much about yourself. And it's a characteristic of almost every young person that I've ever seen in my work. So that got me thinking about worthlessness. Now, what we know from population-wide studies of young people is about a third of our young women regard themselves as worthless, and a quarter of our young men the same. And so what we have in our society are a group of young people who just don't think they're going to amount to much, that they're worth much, that what they have to say has no value, and what they do has no consequence or meaning.
Are those numbers, Andrew, in keeping with the pressures of living in our society today, or were they always there amongst adolescents?
We don't know for sure. What we do know is that those rates increase steadily throughout the school experience. So when you're in secondary school or high school, it's higher than if you're in primary school. And so it bumps up throughout the teen years. And so it's a major area of concern. So one of the things I think as a society, and of course as parents and as teachers, we also need to think about how can we give young people the chance to find a more powerful voice. They've found it certainly on social media outlets,
and that's for good or ill.
That's right.
Yeah.
But in fact, it's almost to the point where everyone's on jury duty permanently. My opinion on everything counts, which is kind of crazy. But in terms of being socially active and making a difference about an issue, this is sadly lacking. And so what we lack is basically that young people are not being asked to make contribution in many cases, and they don't.
Is that because they're not expected to?
Partly, I think we've fallen into this trap of life being so damn busy that we don't get time to ask other people to contribute to ourselves.
And is that also because we believe as a society that young people will let us down, so why bother asking?
Exactly. So essentially then, why trust them in the first place? But of course, as we know, nobody starts out as a maestro. You all have fumbling attempts as you get along the way of learning something.
Yeah.
And of course, everyone, I think, has had the experience, I suspect, in their lives where an outsider has said to you, you're smart, or that was really funny, or how clever that idea was. And it changes your view of yourself. So as adults, we have a role, a powerful role in young people to act as a mirror to the treasures within them. And this is scary and hard for parents because I know lots of parents think their kids are wonderful, and they are, but their kids are deaf to what they see in them. And so we need to think about how as adults, as a group, as a community of adults, we start to give young people positive news about themselves and acknowledge that and ask them for contribution.
Well, Andrew, just on that very subject, I was wondering, what are the symptoms for parents that perhaps their child is not hearing the positives about who they are?
I think when you try to talk to young people about something that you value about them and they're just so dismissive about it. Now, this is a complex matter because there's a sort of, I don't want to publicly acknowledge it, but secretly I do.
Yeah.
And so young people will often privately value things that they publicly disparage. And this is where parenting is an act of sheer blind, unremitting faith because you have no evidence that what you're doing has any effect whatsoever, and yet you need to persevere, you need to continue. And so it's being bloody-minded about it and saying, right, I'm going to tell you how good I think you are.
Despite you rolling your eyes at me.
Despite you with that wither up and die, pout, all that kind of stuff, I'm going to ignore that, bypass it, and just tell you that I think you're great. Because if you don't do that, if you give up, you're going to go, oh, well, they won't listen to me, they don't believe it, then they also don't believe it.
John, as someone who's worked in schools, have you seen what Andrew's talking about, where students either don't want to hear the positive message or when you do give it, don't believe it?
Yes. Yes, and it manifests itself in behaviours that sometimes are public and sometimes are not. So we have things like
what?
Eating disorders. We have body image. We have outrageous behaviour, language. We need to learn to listen better to young people. We don't listen. Often when we're listening, we listen with a sense of judgment, without having an open mind. And I think we need to be very careful, because they'll pick that up very quickly. There is nothing more alert than an adolescent.
That's really interesting.
They can
read
you so carefully. They can read you just by looking in your eyes. They know that you're genuine, or that you care, or you don't.
Gee, you're freaking me out now. John, on that area, though, you say that we need to listen to them. Sometimes, though, as a parent, or maybe as an educator, or even as an employer, we don't really know that they're saying much to us. There's no, as Andrew was saying there, they may give us all the signs that they're not taking in our stuff, but neither are they giving back very much either, sometimes.
No, well, adolescence is still about them. It's the hashtag me first part of life. And what we would hope is that as they grow through adolescence, they'll start to consider that other people are important in their life. We know, and going back to Andrew's point about self-regard, self-worth, is unbelievably important. Unless you think well of yourself, the capacity for you to think well of others is diminished. If you don't think well of yourself, then you can't form relationships with others. So this is particularly important. So we need to listen very carefully to young people who are lacking in their sense of self-worth. We need to authentically and sensibly develop their capacity to think better of themselves. And if they do, then they'll be better in forming relationships, better as team members, better as class members, better as friends. This is particularly important in their lives. So self-regard is critically important. But for young people, social regard is really important. How do other people see me? How do I relate to other people, and how do they relate to me? This is dangerous territory, and Andrew works with it all the time.
Now, I'm not for a moment saying that young people who are depressed can be just cheered up out of depression. That's not what I'm saying.
No.
But I'm saying that to heal a depression, we need to redefine ourselves from being depressed to not being depressed. And that healing, that redefinition, often occurs through a relationship. Sometimes it's with a mental health professional, but more often it's with a family member who basically helps you to see and to recalibrate your view of yourself gradually over time. In fact, it's the parents that do most of the therapy work in my practice. I'm the bystander, to be honest with you. And they're the people who are often just starting to help unpeel those positive aspects and return to the vision of that young person.
So if that parent has that role, and it's a role that I'm sure most parents would want to be as good at as they can be. Not that we all come perfectly skilled up in that area, God knows. But also, as John's pointed out, if we don't have self-regard as parents, it's very hard to pass on sometimes all the regard you actually do feel for your children, because you're held back by your past as well. So there's so many things to reconnoiter and negotiate there. So, Andrew, what's your advice? Because along with the parental background that comes with all that, not every case of teenage depression is an anxious teenager, or vice versa.
Listening is true worship, really. And in the modern age where people are so rushed, being an adult who's just prepared to listen and be honest. So, of course, we don't always have the answers. I don't always have the answers. None of us do. but you can listen and remain in conversation. Because, of course, when a young person's conversing with you about their feelings, they're not doing something more disastrous, of course. So it's important to remain in that conversation about possibilities for their life. And sometimes it's important because, you know, as an adult, and I think probably like most adults, you become enthusiastic on the behalf of a young person. How about going here? How about doing that? Catching up with that old friend? And we all try and be overly helpful. But sometimes by doing that, we inadvertently stifle the young person's resolution of their direction. And so I think it's a fine mix between the G-up stuff and also just being prepared to listen. And that requires a humbleness on adults of going, well, I don't know. I'm not sure what you should do about this, but let's stay and talk about it together over the next few weeks or months and see what we come up with.
So be positive but not stifling, encouraging but not daggy, open and listening but without being so consciously so that your teenager rolls their eyes at you. I mean, you just got to be present and authentic.
And the other thing, I guess, is not to say, well, I had that when I was a teenager and I got through it. And you know, of course, that's the worst thing to do.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Because as far as they're concerned, this never happened to anyone else until now.
And your experience is totally irrelevant to my life.
Yeah. The really important thing is that teenagers, like the rest of us, find it very difficult to deal with the mistakes we make ourselves. And so can I just ask everyone to not say, what are you going to do about it? It's what can we do about this now? So that they don't feel alone. And Andrew's point about listening carefully, you know, listen, understand, explore, do some deep thinking with them, not for them, and not ask them to do it alone. Because they don't have the wherewithal often to actually come up with a solution that's going to be constructive. Shame and blame will come in and they'll run for cover and we'll throw rocks at them and nothing will be achieved in the end, and all we'll do is to consolidate their belief that in fact adults are not helpful most of the time.
This has been Teen Matters with Andrew Fuller and John Hendry. If you have an issue that is present within your family, within your workplace, within your institution around young people that you'd like to share with us, we keep all names out of it. There's no need to worry about that. And we would like to hear your scenario so we can perhaps provide some general advice. Our email address is lifematters@abc.net.au. And just put Teen Matters in the subject line. But for now, Andrew Fuller, John Hendry, catch you soon.
Thank you.